All right. Welcome, everyone. Declare open this council meeting for the 3rd of April. Welcome, councillors. Welcome, staff. We have a great representation of staff from finance, policy, communications. There'll be others as well, even found the harbour master. So welcome everyone, and welcome to the media also. We do not have any apologies. We do have a request for a leave of absence, so I'm happy to move that we accept that. Seconded, Councillor Hope. All those in favour, please say aye. Against, carried. Thank you. In attendance, I think I've just covered that. We'll confirm the agenda is circulated. Remind councillors of any conflicts of interest. There are no matters for public forum or presentation, so we'll move straight to item 8, the confirming the minutes of the 20th of February council meeting as a true and accurate record. Everybody's had a chance to have a look. Thank you, Councillor Hope. You're happy to move. Is there somebody prepared to second the true and accurate record? Councillor Bell, I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye. Against, carried. Thank you. Actions, there is one there, I think, isn't there, Liz? And it's been completed. So we'll move straight on to item 10 and start with the chairperson's report. Just pick up a couple of things there. The Civil Defence Emergency Management, hopefully all councillors have been sent a copy of the plan. Did you receive that in the mail? Yep. So that's out for consultation until the end of April.
Are we discussing that at any point?
No.
Discuss it now.
But
there was just one comment in it which I thought was pathetic.
Right.
It was sort of a little ditty joke about when we were students or something.
Right.
It was with reference to younger people not being interested in, you know, may or may not be, and it referred to students. And I just thought it was out of place and pathetic.
Right. Right. I just can't remember where that is, but I'll have a look at it. But anyway, it's open for consultation, and the group will be hearing submissions in the middle of May, I think it is. You'll see some other comments there from Mr. Hawker's report at Civil Defence, including the draft budget that the group dealt with for that is part of our annual plan budget. And you'll see a extra staff member being proposed for the Queenstown Lakes District area to deal with civil defence matters there. Other than that, I'll take my report. Oh, no, there's a couple of things I'd like to refer to. Firstly is just acknowledge the effort that staff went to through both the attend and the Wanaka show and the bus hub opening. Both were extremely successful. Thank you for the effort put in there. The other one I'd like to acknowledge is the Port Otago Open Day, a very successful open day for the community that surrounds the port, and we had to put up with some noise with respect to piling operations for the wharf extension. And Councillor Hope was there also, and I was able to be there for the day too, and it's a very successful day. And the other matter which I didn't have on my list was last Thursday, Mrs. Gardner and I and our partners attended a farewell function acknowledging the retirement of Ross Black as founding trustee and chairperson of the Otago Rescue Helicopter Trust. And I had an opportunity to speak on behalf of council and thank Ross for essentially 24 years, 22 as a trustee, but he's involved in the rescue helicopter work for 24 years, founding chairman, as I said, and just a huge input over a very long period of time, and Otago, and in fact, southern New Zealand, owes Ross a massive thanks and gratitude for the work he put in, because we've got the best service in New Zealand, second to none, as a result nowadays, and it's been quite a commitment over a long period of time. So, Mrs. Gardner, it was a very enjoyable evening.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
And there was three or four of us spoke thanking Ross, and we were reasonably timely. Ross took the floor and... Did it take an hour?
Yeah, it took an hour.
I got home at midnight anyway.
Yeah.
And Ross's passion and drive and diligence and eye for detail, we all understand completely, and he certainly walked us through the journey that has been the development of that trust that evening. So, but it was a real privilege to be there on your behalf, and both Mrs. Gardner and myself, and Council's contribution was acknowledged. So, yeah, I have my report for questions. Councillor Nook.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I just want to go to your paragraph or two on the mayoral forum and just ask the question around paragraph two, where it talks about housing availability and affordability, and I just wondered what the appetite is like in that forum to discuss or have on the radar urban development, which is a major focus for us in terms of challenges now and into the future. So, yeah, what is the appetite like? Because you're dealing with TLAs where it's a focus area for them, but probably for different reasons.
Yes, no, good question, Councillor Noon. So one of the bullet points is, and I actually raised it and have done several times now, is future. What does Otago look like in the future? So that hasn't been very well written, but that is part of that. So it's dealing with urban growth, the wider growth in population in the Central Otago, Queenstown Lakes districts. And so what is that bit of work, Mrs. Gardner, in my view, needs to look at what is Otago going to look like in 20, 30 and 50 years' time, and what do we need to be thinking about and planning for that? And urban growth is part of that discussion.
So
Mrs. Gardner, do you want to add anything?
I think, you know, the mayoral forums are starting to have some good conversation about its focus and also how that's supported through the Secretariat. And as you'll probably know, Mr. McCabe was helping us with the Secretariat, but what the mayoral forum is flagging is that they are really looking for someone who can be a strategic advisor, someone to do that sort of environmental scanning and understand some of the issues and then create advice for the forum so that they can get more out of the discussions that they want to have on these matters.
And look, the reason why I raise it is there an opportunity through that forum to essentially pursue the issues and challenges that we have in the urban development space to ensure TLAs perhaps embrace the regional council's challenges. I immediately think of natural hazards, for example, and you know, urban development in appropriate areas. So that was why I raised it.
That's a lot.
Thank you. Good to see it's on the agenda. I've been asking around this question for a while, and actually the futures point comes up again. When we get to the proposal for the process for developing FMUs and the process for that plan change, we talk about scenarios and we talk about the socio-economic impacts of how these plan changes are going to affect our communities. And my experience has been, I guess, there's been population documents, there's been futures documents that talk about what the future might look like, so you've got something agreed upon about how to measure or discuss what that future might look like. So, for example, if we've got a Future for Otago document that then explains what that might be with some various scenarios, land change for example, how that's going to affect the water plan and those discussions in Section 32, that would be really valuable. Are we looking that that would be that type of document that will help us to have those broader discussions, or are we not there yet?
I think we're possibly not there yet, but that that's where the Mayoral Forum want to go. So, you know, the understanding I have is that they're wanting to consolidate some information and knowledge together to inform how they might want to proceed as a forum and how they could best give effect to being together and working together in that way.
But it's definitely part of the reason I raised it is it's easy to look at little bits, but you need to put it together, or distinct parts of districts across the region, but you need to put it together from a regional in more than just land transport planning.
Yeah, and I think for things like our water plan, it is integral to everything else.
Correct.
Biodiversity, urban design, all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So to actually have a document to hang our hat on will make our work easier as well. I don't know what process that strategy or discussion would have to go through to give it weight, but otherwise we may end up having to sort of churn out information each time we write one of those Section 32 reports, is my understanding.
So one of the things that we've identified that we need to do internally, and it's the reason why we've now called our policy, strategy and science group, why we've included strategy in the name, is because we've identified that we also need to make sure that we're having that future focus as an organisation, looking forward and seeing those things that are coming at us. And so we're just in the process now of framing up what that will look like internally.
This is Scott.
Thank you. In paragraph number one, you use the word strategic priorities, and then in the number two section, your various topic headings. Are these, in fact, your strategic priorities? And if they are, if you could just outline how you determined them.
So, yeah, the Mayoral Forum had had two sessions. The second one facilitated, and those are the headings that came out from issues for across the region.
Are they issues or are they strategic priorities? What are they?
I would have, it's not really for me to comment, it's more for you to comment, but I would have said that at the moment they're more topic headings.
Yeah.
Rather than strategic priorities, but the conversation that's been started is actually about how, you know, in order for us to have an effective secretariat, we need to understand what are the outcomes that the Mayoral Forum is trying to achieve, and so this is part of a conversation to get them to that place so that they are clear about the outcomes they're looking for,
yeah,
so that we can best serve them with the secretariat.
Yeah.
It's from my perspective, as long as the OSC is taken on that journey and then appropriately involved. I'm always looking for outcomes from the Mayoral Forum.
And so this conversation is focused on achieving outcomes, and so the resource to support the Mayoral Forum, a dedicated resource, strategic advisor, however, to help inform that, what is the work, what are the key topics that we'll be asking that individual to focus on.
Councillor Lawson. Listen, go for your life. I don't know too many mayoral forums have ever achieved anything in New Zealand local government, but
you'll
always be a first. So best of luck. Generally, most of them end up with the mayor of the day bringing their pet issue of the moment to them and them forming a resolution on that, and that's about it. So I'm a bit worried that you're going to be granting ratepayers money to do nothing, but it doesn't matter. You've done that before. No, the issue that I am interested in is the Wanaka show.
Yes.
What I'd really like, it's the first time, I think, OIC's been there, is that right?
No.
Or second time?
No, been there on
whatever.
And off over the years.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
Yep.
What I haven't seen is an effectiveness review. And what I'd like to see is that I want to know how many people attended our tent. What did they look? What did they seek out in terms of information? What did they engage the staff on? What opportunities or what commentaries or critiques did they offer us? And really an overall effectiveness of our tent and our engagement in that particular environment. We had a lot of staff tied up there for 2 days. And did it work? Now, I'm not interested in anecdotal feedback, but I want to get some proper evaluative feedback.
Oh, yeah,
I was
going
to
do.
Do you want me to
respond?
Yes. Thank you, Mrs.
Gunner. Could I just suggest perhaps that, yes, the Wanaka show is an example of engagement that we have had, but actually we're looking more broadly at the types of engagement that we're undertaking, and that's been part of the work that Peter Fitzjohn and now Sally Giddens are doing with our communications team, looking specifically at some of those, if you like, fundamentals around stakeholder engagement, stakeholder mapping, and understanding more broadly about our strategic relationships and the places where we need to be and we get the most effective engagement. So it's a little bit of a wider piece of work, and so I guess what I'm saying is it possible that you could wait for us to inform you about that more rather than just do an effectiveness review on one event?
Well, see, it worries me that you haven't done one, in other words, that's the answer I'm getting. And so you're looking at, am I to understand that you're reviewing whether or not the IRC attending that show and any other shows, home shows and things like that, is a good strategy?
Well, I think we need to go right back to basics and look at, for example, why we're engaging, what we're engaging for, and what are the outcomes we're looking for. And I think we haven't necessarily got that full suite of discipline around some of the engagement we're doing at the moment, which is why we're reviewing it in the way that I'm suggesting.
And I would imagine feedback from the likes of the Wanaka Show will turn up in the committee papers.
Yes.
It may have been in the previous one, I'm just not too sure from a timing perspective. It may not have been. But,
was it in the last comments paper?
Yeah, it may not have been. That's what I'm referring to because of closeness of the time. But, yeah. All right. Chief Executive's report.
Just before you do, Mr. Chairman,
apologies.
One more question about one that Councillor Noon referred to, housing availability and affordability. When I read that, I immediately thought of an issue I'd become involved with in the fringes because of where I live, which is Opoho North East Valley, with refugee and immigrant housing. It's been given quite a lot of media attention the last few days because at least two or three families of Syrians have found themselves in housing which was wrong, damp, crowded, six kids per room, this sort of thing. And it seems to me that's where the mayoral forum could actually play a role, in that there could be opportunities for housing, for example, a Syrian widow with eight kids, which is one of the problems that Eden's had to resolve. There could be opportunities in other district areas other than Dunedin, where there might be availability of affordable housing for such families, and particularly with another wave of Afghani families about to arrive, I understand. That would seem to me to be a very good function of the mayoral forum, to discuss the possibilities of where affordable housing is, rather than just having them all in two or three suburbs of Dunedin. That's my comment.
We pass that on. All right, thank you. Mrs. Gardner, Chief Executive's report.
Thank you. I'll take my report as read. Obviously, when I write my report, sometimes I have engagements that happen between times. I just thought I'd update you on my 29th of March visit. So I was asked by the South Otago Buyers Investment Group to go to Clydevale, which I did, and I spent the morning with a local dairy farmer who showed me around a number of dairy properties that he owns. Which was great for me in terms of getting a mix of understanding of different operations. So one, for example, had not quite a herd home, but the sort of equivalent of that. Another one was an irrigated farm, so seeing the difference in the condition of the pasture and those sorts of things compared to a non-irrigated farm in a similar area. And after I'd done that, I spoke with the group on 6A and the water plan review particularly. What was encouraging, the farmer that I went on the visits with is compliant with 6A, particularly for his nutrient loading, and we had a substantial conversation about how he's gone about that and the triggers for him in terms of thinking about his practice, and also how he's made changes, whether that's to stocking numbers or wintering practice and those sorts of things in order to be compliant. So it was a very positive day, and I greatly appreciated being hosted. I'm happy to take questions.
All right. Councillor Lawton.
Thank you. On the 28th, of March, you met with Ravensdown. What did they, was that about their plant, or was it about bigger picture of
It was both. Ravensdown have been for some time sort of reinventing their business, if you like, and moving from being simply a fertiliser company to a company that it also has an environmental division now. The conversation traversed a number of areas. We talked about the wharf at Ravensdown, the Ravensdown plant, about their concern around any issues that I might have been aware of with the plant and its operation, which there are none, as far as I'm aware, and also about 6A and in particular how our rules rely on Overseer. Ravensdown were part of the conglomerate that developed Overseer, and also about how, I understand from some farmers that there's a shortage of nutrient management advisors, and that's going to be something that in Otago we're going to need that sort of advice from here on in. So that was the kind of conversation that we had.
Scott,
point 32, where it says, there's an issue with the RPS, or a potential issue with the RPS, and it says that the purpose of particular act is not achieved by the proposed RPS statement when read as a whole with the partly operative RPS. Just like some insight into that issue.
Sure. It comes out of a procedural decision from Judge Jackson that we had to provide a response to by the 29th of March, and also had to make any appeal to the High Court by the 5th of April. This judgment's been a little bit of a surprise to us, but it is significant, and we're taking it very seriously because it effectively undermines the integrity of the whole document, and to a large degree means that if the judgment was to stand, then the RPS has some significant issues around validity. So we do need to address that, and you'll be aware that I have taken the necessary steps to lodge an appeal with the High Court. That won't be a process that happens quickly. So we are likely to be in a year's worth of process by the time we get a decision out the other end. But it's incredibly significant for us as a council and calls into question the validity of our RPS. So we need to get some clarity on that as quickly as possible.
Okay. And some clarification, please, in terms of the validity of the operative RPS, from a legal perspective, in terms of how much should it be taken into consideration or effect.
The judgment talks about the judge's view that we perhaps have jumped the gun in making parts of the RPS operative. But, of course, we weren't to know that in the background he had this view about the RPS as a whole. He's only just told us that that this is an issue, and in fact, one of the reasons why it's a little bit of a surprise is because it was in relation to procedural decisions on particular matters that weren't resolved through appeal. So to then have a comment come up about the whole of the RPS at this point in time was a surprise to us.
Is it actually valid to have a particular focus by a judge on a narrow path of a plan and then to come up with an all-encompassing statement?
That could be a question. I'm just mindful that if we're going to enter legal proceedings, we need to be careful about how much we talk about. But at the same time, yes, I think that's part of the question. In reality, our view is that the judge has in fact approved parts of the RPS, and so the question then becomes, how is it that we have decisions that have been made on the RPS that approve it, but then in this latest judgment it seems to call that into question when you say that the whole RPS doesn't give effect or achieve the purpose of the Act. So,
And finally, do we have a plan B?
A plan B in terms of the RPS? Well, we're just getting some further, taking a further look at that because we need to understand the full extent of the impacts of a judgment like this. And really, I guess, the plan B is in case law, suggests that what we would have to rely on would be the purpose of the Act.
Okay.
So we'd have to go back to that.
Councillor Robertson.
I think probably most of what I was going to say has been covered, but I did want to go back to your comments. I'll get back to the RPS, but I want to go back to your comments about visiting dairy farms in Clydesdale and just sparked off a big opportunity for showcasing again leaders in Otago. There's the slogan, I am compliant, and what it means for that person to have achieved that, and it's not for them often farming as usual, and there's real leadership going on and changes being made. He's obviously someone that's fronted up as a leader to show you around, and I'm sure there's some that will step forward to be more public with that, but just that's one thing to comment on. It'll be great to be doing that. Second thing about the RPS, it's major shock and a major blow, this decision. I support going to the High Court and your decision under delegation to do that. Any discussion around legal matters, we do need to go into public excluded, so we keep that in mind. But major ramifications for all of Otago and the involvement that people have had in building this RPS. It's important that we do go to High Court and get a judgment to sort this out. We need an RPS.
Good. Thank you. Councillor Laws?
Yes, I mean, I can't imagine a more significant threat to the council's overall strategic direction, to be perfectly honest with you, of anything that's come before this chamber than this judgment. And I think it needed a separate item, and it frankly, it shouldn't have been brought up under the Chief Executive's report, Mr. Chairman. It should have been a separate item and we should be discussing it. And we're certainly not going to be discussing it in the kind of detail that we need to be giving it. And I would suggest, Mr. Chairman, that we need a proper legal review or a review from our lawyers of the judgments and the implications that flow from that, brought to probably our next committee round. Now, the Chief Executive has, colleagues, decided to appeal this decision to the High Court, which is the only place you can go, that's fair enough. But on what grounds? We need to be making a policy decision around that and be fully informed. So I would like to think, Mr. Chairman, that the next committee round, I don't care what committee it's in, probably policy, that we have the opportunity to work through the full implications of this judgment and the potential legal opportunities that we have. I read this judgment in the last part, Clause 17 seems to me the most salient, where he's expecting exactly what's going to occur, which is expecting that we will, and other parties, head off in another direction to clarify. But my concern is this, and I do need to raise it with you. Judge Jackson is known as a bit of a mercurial individual. I think that would be the best way to put it. His judgments are often creative, and he has a reputation for being so. But the High Court action that we're planning to take leaves us in a limbo, and I want to get the implications of that too. We are probably, you're right, Sarah, I can't imagine this being settled in the High Court by the end of this year. We're looking well and deep into next and a new counsel. And so I need to understand fully the implications of that. Now, we're not going to have time to do that, and I don't expect to be indulged on that issue now. But I would like, Stephen, if we could take some time to get into this judgment and where we go to from here, and also if we could have our legal advisers here to take us through the options that may or may not present themselves as a consequence. Is that possible?
At the committees?
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. But as Mrs. Gardner has explained, the time constraints between getting this...
I've got no difficulty with you raising an appeal now. You've had a time constraint. That's fine. I've had it explained to me. Thank you. But now, what we're actually going to say and do, we need to discuss in some detail.
What now?
Exactly.
No, agree completely. And I'd imagine that would be coming to committee anyway.
No problem.
So.
Is that policy? Would that go to policy, Mr. Chair?
I think
it would be. The RPS has been sitting in under policy, so I don't think
it's
a relevant place for it. So, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Just as part of that discussion, I would encourage all councillors, if you haven't already, and even if you have already, have a full read of the material that's been circulated, because there's some interesting decisions and changes to the RPS in there. Read it carefully.
Well, surely, Mr. Chair, that would be part of a report to make all that quite clear.
It's there in front of you. You've had it circulated as part of the agenda. So just a bit of a reminder. Have a good read.
Mr. Chair, can I then move with perhaps Gretchen, we could move together that a full report of the implications of this be brought to the next policy committee, including the attendance of our legal advisers.
Are you able to, are you happy to wrap in that we resolved to receive the Chair and Chief Executive's reports also make that the first recommendation, and the second is, Liz, did you capture that?
Yes, sir.
Righto. Any further, before I put that, any further questions of the Chief Executive's report? Mrs. Hogue. Councillor Hogue.
Thank you, Councillor Woodhead. Mrs. Gardner, I just want to ask you, the last two, 34 and 35, we're talking about the workings going on in the customer relationship management tool, and perhaps, there could be the potential to have a purchase. Have you got any more comments that you could make to me, please, on that?
Sure.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
We've talked around this table before about a CRM system,
mm-hmm.
But what's really important is that we actually understand before we embark on anything that looks like a purchase, that we understand our customers, the kind of service offering that we are looking to provide for our customers, and the way that we need to manage that moving forward. So this really is a precursor and an informing piece of work that will set the scene for how we work with our customers moving forward, but also allow us to be very clear about what our objectives are for any potential purchase of a CRM.
All right. No further questions. Then we have recommendations moved and seconded. No further discussion. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. All right. On to item 11, matters for council decision. And the first item is the recommendations from the hearing panel with respect to our navigation and safety bylaw, which you're all aware has been working through a process of reviewing the bylaw. And Councillor Scott chaired, along with other members of the panel, with Councillor Lawton and Mr.
Lyndon from Environment Southland.
Yep. So there was three panel members worked through the process recently. You'll see the recommendations there. Councillor Scott, I ask you to give us some feedback on that. Perhaps you want to move the recommendation so we've got something to debate.
Okay, I'll move the recommendation.
Thank you. And second it, Councillor Lawton, are you happy to second? Righto. Councillor Scott, do you want to introduce them? Mr. Rushbrook, you might be able to join us at the end of the table if there were any technical questions.
Okay, I'll kick it off. Firstly, I'd just like to thank the other panel members, Councillor Lawton, Lyndon from Environment Southland, and also Steve, their Harbour Master, for all the very positive work that's been carried out. Just in summary, it is proposed that the bylaw will become legal as of the 1st of May. There were 38 submissions, of which 18 persons stated they'd like to be heard. However, following the submissions, the Harbour Master, along with Navigatus consultants on this issue, analysed the feedback and adjusted the draft bylaws. And from that, only three submissions wished to be heard at the hearing. And I must say there were some very good, insightful submissions. Point number five, in fact, just to point out the mistake there that refers to April, and April, in fact, are March dates. Thank you, Councillor Lee. In terms of the discussion, following the consultation, the hearing panel process, various minor changes were made. The most significant changes have been around bylaw 8, the wearing of life jackets, and the originally proposed use in vessels up to 9 metres, where all submitters were of the opinion we should remain consistent with the 6-metre national rule. So that was probably one of the most significant changes through the consultation. In relation to bylaw 11, where fishing or swimming or diving around landing places, there was significant feedback and a small alteration in the wording was widely accepted. We now have a full interpretation of accident and what that means. Bylaw 5.3 is in relation to cool cord, and following what we thought was an insightful submission, we added a bylaw in relation to the cool cord where it states on 5.3 that any person in charge of a vessel fitted with a cool cord must ensure that the cool cord is fitted correctly at all times whilst underway. Our Harbour Master Steve might want to talk about that in due course. Bylaw 21, conduct near marine mammals, has been added following consultation with DOC. The mooring definitions have been restructured, and the definitions and bylaw around bylaw 25 around moving the prohibited zone around large vessels or tugs widthwise, lengthwise, has been simplified. So there it is. Just like to thank everybody in terms of the process. And I'd like to think that we've got a relatively practical bylaw that will have some benefit in terms of our harbours and so forth. There it is. Steve.
Thank you, Councillor Scott. Mr. Rushbrook, anything you would like to add?
I think from my point of view, just to reiterate Brian's point there, you know, we've got a real good opportunity to clean the bylaws up. We've hopefully made them short, concise and clear for people to understand. I'm quite pleased that we've managed to reduce the original one quite considerably down to a document which is, you know, not hundreds of pages long, but actually 30 pages long. So I think it comes across quite usable, functional and current for where we are in our water spaces at this time around. So I'm happy to take any questions anybody may have.
Thank you. Councillor Lawton.
Thank you, and thanks everyone. Thank you, Steve, for your work on this. I think it's just important to highlight some of the other conversation, and in particular the need for this bylaw to sit alongside or within the national legislation. And then you've got your bylaw, which also sits along our neighbouring harbour masters' jurisdictions, and the need for them to complement. And then into also the more specific harbour master guidance that you give, which provides an opportunity for more rules. And I just wanted you to give a little bit more detail about that to council, because it's another level. You have your full discretion about as a harbour master about creating those. So I think it's important to realise that not everything's in the bylaw, and some other issues have actually fallen.
So as an example, the moving prohibited zone was quite a highlighted issue from the people who submitted at the hearings panel. And following discussions, we're able to move the 4 kilometre moving zone out of the bylaws here and into what we call the harbour master's direction. There's an allowance to develop both bylaws and directions out of the maritime rules and the MTA. And by way of that, we're able to make those directions in a separate document that are more relevant and local to specific locations or operations on the water. So the moving prohibited zone is a specifically commercial issue between large vessels and large vessels only. So what we've done on this instance is we've taken that particular clause out there, which was being sort of scrutinised and actually not relevant for small vessels at all, and taken those and put those into the harbour master's directions in due course, where it's more relevant for the specific operation within the harbour here and not across the whole of Otago jurisdiction as it sits.
So we don't have those here, do we?
No, we don't. They're next after this. This is the first priority to deal with these. The directions are a lot smaller document. There are only 6 or 7 directions at the moment, and they also need cleaning up, but that's the next step once we've done these as well.
We have got that at the beginning of the navigation bylaw, just to let people know that they need to go there for further detail.
Yep. I think once we're in agreement here and we can promulgate these, the Harbour Master's directions will come quick and fast, and they will go as a similar handout alongside each other, so people can get that educational process as well.
That's all I hope.
Thank you. Harbour Master, I have a quick couple of questions for you. So I looked at this, am I correct, there's 30 bylaws, you know, when you look at it?
Yes, some of those are admin stuff, but yes.
Yes, there is. Okay, so I remember I asked you that question saying to you that I come into a shop, a boat shop for example, I spend a lot of money, and does somebody give me these bits of information, or is it up to me to go and find it, and then at the same time I've got to know to have my vessel identified? Then also, do I go out to St. Bathans and do I see a big sign that says on the lake all things that will have changed? How much information do I get if I don't know anything about this?
That's all part of the educational process,
yep,
which is the next step.
Right.
And we have to start with a base document, which is our guidance, and out of this will come an educational process. Meet and greet, community stuff, signage is next on the list as well. Again, the wording needs to be okayed here and vetted here, and we have to be happy with this, and then the relevant correct signage can go up. I have to say it's a little bit neglect around Otago. We've got a big project to do on that. We're already kick-starting that behind the scenes in sort of anticipation of this. So it's the next step, really. to answer all those questions. You know, do you go and buy something? Do you get this given to you? No, currently you don't. It's your responsibility to go and learn about it. But part of the process will be to make sure we engage with people in boating communities to make sure they've got this information readily available.
Thank you. And thank you to the panel as well for undertaking it. Appreciate it.
Councillor Kempton.
Thank you, Mr Chair. I'm not going to attempt to impede the progress of this bylaw. I think that for the most part it tidies things up well, and I think a good job's been done by all. But I remember making this point at in workshop, and I'll make it again, is that this bylaw is the same as allowing a 15-year-old to get into a motor car, possibly drug or alcohol impaired, and say to the other passengers, you don't actually have to wear a seatbelt today, I've decided. And what I'm suggesting, so you put that into this context, you're talking about life jackets. And it seems to me that life jackets, yes, compulsory wearing, but with so many conditions on that, that it's pretty pointless. And I think that life jackets are going to continue to be used as cushions or end up in the bilge. And we've got to keep in mind that many small boat marine accidents happen without a period of anxiety for anybody beforehand. They come out of nowhere. And I actually think that this is soft. I don't know whether there were reasons around government legislation that required it to be soft, but I guess that the point I want to make is that you've got a huge education job to do because this isn't doing it for you. But I won't attempt to impede its progress. Thank you.
Mr Rushbrook, do you want to respond in any way to that?
I think it's a fair point. The feedback we had on the harder line that we initially took has required us to soften this down a little bit, but this is a level up from where we were previously. It is consistent with a large number of regional councils around New Zealand, and there's also a piece of work going on in the Harbour Master information groups where we're uplifting that to Maritime New Zealand on a national basis, because we're looking for some clear, structured, hard line on life jackets. So it's a work in progress, and I agree we've got a big piece of work to do on the education
side. Central government support will be helpful.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, no further discussion. Recommendations there and have been moved and seconded. We receive the report, adopts the ORC Navigation Safety Bylaw 2019 as recommended by the hearings panel with a commencement date of 1st of May. And approves the affixing of the common seal. So it's actually a significant step because the old bylaw has been out of date, and so A, we're up to speed, and B, we've got a harbour master in place, so significant achievement on both. I'll put it, no further discussion. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Well done, Mr Rushbrook.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Steve. All right. Over the page, item 11.2, and we might have some staff join us, Mr Newman, Ms Briggs, Ms Ludick, and Mr De Policemaker.
And
Ms Dorr. And Ms Dorr coming too, okay. She there too. Three seats available. Somebody make up your mind, please.
You did the presentation, so you definitely get up. Would you like to take my seat?
Yeah. You sure? There's a spare seat here. You can sit in my seat, Tom.
Thank you.
Yep. All right, welcome, and so just introducing item 11.2 as part of the water plan review process, the early stages of that. We need to set freshwater management units, or FMUs as they're commonly called, and staff have worked through with our partners an approach there, and the recommendations you'll see are to receive this report, adopts the following FMUs for freshwater management for managing freshwater across Otago, my apologies. Firstly, five freshwater management units for Otago region, respectively called the Mataau, the Tairi, North Tail, Dunedin Coastal and Catlin, and further a delineation of the Mataour into five subunits called Rohe, being the Upper Lakes, Dunstan, Menhirikea, Roxburgh and Lower Clutha. 2B, the proposed consultation engagement model for the development of freshwater objectives for Otago's FMUs, excluding the Arrow and Cadrona catchments and the Menhirikea Rohe, and the proposed engagement approach for priority plan changes in the Arrow and Cadrona catchments and the Menhirikea Rohe. All right. Mr. Newman, do you want to just give give us some outline of the process you've been through and where
you've
come to?
The team who's done the work should talk to it, I think, rather
I
than
know.
Me.
that's fine. Yep. Mr. Briggs?
I suppose the workshop that we...
Pull that a bit closer to you if you can, Julia, please.
We developed a freshwater management setting team throughout council, including Okaha. We've worked on this project over the last 3 months, from January until now, to reach the recommendation in part 2A of this report in terms of the freshwater management unit setting. As we discussed this morning, we looked at a number of various options for approaching that and settled on the current approach that we recommend for adoption. Which provides for a mountains to the sea approach and then and also a practical approach to dealing with the Clutha Mataour, which is a rather large catchment in itself. I'm not sure how much more I want to add to that.
Take questions.
Yeah, I can take any questions that you may have. There's also the engagement part of the paper as well, and I'm not sure if Tom or Sylvie wants to say anything further about that?
Well, yeah, I think the engagement process that we are outlining in this paper is the natural next step. Once we have set up FMU, we have to think about what's next, and it's about having the conversation with the community about the value and thinking about how we're going to set those values, the objectives and the limits as we are required under the NPS. So it's moving towards the planning of all the projects that we have to do once the FMUs are approved.
What Sylvie has done is she has really developed a blueprint for undertaking consultation in all the FMUs, recognizing that, you know, we've got the priority catchments. I'll try to avoid the use of the word priority, but recognizing that we've got that process going on, we have to apply a different consultation approach for those catchments in order to meet the time frames. We're not, like I said during the last meeting, we're not trying to take any shortcuts. It will just be a little bit more condensed, and instead of like identifying the values from point one, we might just go to the community and confirm what we heard in the past and ask for feedback. And also, we are proposing to take, we're proposing to establish a tag and a community reference group as well, so we can work through some of the intermediate steps with those groups in order to move a little bit faster, really.
Good. All right. Thank you. Open the paper up for discussion. Councillor Scott and Councillor Digger.
Yeah, no, very good. Four quick points, if I may. The first point is, one of the things I like about this paper is that we're actually getting on with it. We've got tight time frames, and we've very quickly got to this space, so well done. Second point, now that we've got these maps, and I'm looking forward to the rivers being integrated as well, it actually helps me understand the work that you guys have been doing in establishing 9 FMUs, and when you look at it in terms of from a catchment geographical basis, the upper lakes in terms of Wakatipu, Wanakaha, where the Dunstan, the Roxburgh down to the Roxburgh Dent, the Menhirikea, the lower Clutha with the mix, the Pomahaka and the Clutha, the Catlins, the coastal, the Tairi, these are all distinct catchments. And at the end of the day, if you haven't got them quite right, does it really matter? Because each FMU will be analysed in this particular way, the values, the people, the participation in the process. So I think it's a great first start. I also like the fact that you've identified the priorities. You know, we know about the Manuhiri Care, the Cadrona, the Yarrow, but also you've highlighted, I think, North Otago and parts of the Clutha Mato. So, hey, it's great. Thank you. I look forward to the more detailed map, as I said before. I'm actually happy to move the motion, the recommendation.
Recommendations. Thank you, Councillor Scott. Is there a seconder? Councillor Deacon is nodding.
Yep. Sure.
Thank you. Councillor Deacon.
Yeah, happy to second this. Not many months ago that none of us had ever heard of an FMU. And I guess that applies to staff as well. I'm really impressed with this being a multidisciplinary effort, a multi-agency effort. It's come to the table well presented. It's taken a big jump into here is what we want to go out with as the Otago Region FMUs. And to me, they look and feel absolutely right, to be perfectly honest. I thought it would be a hell of a complicated job going around catchment by catchment and drawing lines and rubbing them out and putting them over on the next ridge. And well, maybe it did involve that, I don't know. I wasn't there. And as an old geographer, I'd love to have been there because that's the sort of thing I like. But, but anyway, that's not my job. My job is to say...
That school shoot geography would have seen you well, Michael.
A wee bit beyond that. Probably geomorphology honours level, I think.
Oh, you rub it in.
We were very much on the agenda. Geography is the agenda. What I wanted to say was to the staff, and I probably said already, I'm going to say it again, I admire the way this has happened. I admire the speed with which it happened, the thoroughness with which it happened, the clarity with which it has been presented to us, and good luck with the engagement, because that's the big bit. And I didn't mean that cynically, because I think schools as an engaging organisation are getting better all the time. The draft plans that are there, which are pretty drafty, because they don't include much in the way of a technical plan, but I'm sure that'll evolve, and we'll see it come through the comms committee work or policy, wherever you choose to put it. But I'm happy to second, happy to support, and I wish to join my colleagues in congratulating the team from our organisation, from Okaha, from the consultants who were engaged. It's all very impressive. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Robinson.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Deacon. I wanted to echo your words as well. It's very impressive to have got to this stage and has raised confidence broadly, I think, in the community and also around the table. I echo as well that it looks and feels right. The considerations that have been given to these FMUs, which obviously could be refined over time, they're designed to be iterative. So if we find that through community valuing these areas that some are similar to others, they could be combined, or if they're found to be very different, they could be split up too. That's part of the process, but this is a really good starting point, as others have said. Really helpful paper, I think, priority-wise. That's good. A lot of these are high development pressure areas and also ones where we've got immediate concerns with deemed permit expiry. The one that I think there's some talk about, though, would be coastal Dunedin with urban water, and there's no immediate pressures to elevate the priority of this FMU. I would think that's not correct. Dunedin's been waiting for decades to sort out its stormwater issues, and we have started and have given agreement to TAs that we're starting that process. So that would be one that potentially could
change in priority, but that's okay. We will work through these. This is a starting point, as we've said. Engagement, there's a bigger picture than just the FMUs, which we'll need to get our heads around. Someone was just saying before, FMUs, we hadn't heard about them, you know, probably we had, but, you know, in detail until recently. We've had a number of workshops, but probably we've jumped quite a long way ahead of general community, and we need general community to be involved in a big way going forward with a full plan review, which is what this is gearing up towards. So we just need to step back and think too, how are we going to actually engage right at grassroots with where we're heading with a whole water plan review, what that means, so that people are really comfortable then about heading into FMU process, because they understand the bigger picture. And part of that as well, and what we heard with Iwi recently, was the need for an overall picture for the water plan too, and that structure. So that's something to keep in mind, as well as specific FMUs and more localised issues. Where's the bigger picture heading? So that's an engagement thing to keep in mind. This paper I know is focusing on FMUs, so that's good. It's within scope of this paper, but let's not lose track of that. Then there's the tailored approach for engagement too, which gets down to more specifics. And I just want to point out that in the paper it says at the moment, this is probably important for the Aero, Cadrona and Manuherikia, that it's yet to be determined if the scope of those plan changes will be extended to water quality, bed disturbance, structures, etc. Doesn't mention groundwater in this paper, but so the scope at the moment that is agreed, minimum flows, allocation limits and other policies and rules for the taking and use of water. So that's what the paper says. You might want to comment on that. Sorry, and I'm just nearly finished. Yeah, no, that was all. Thanks. Yep.
Yeah.
Sorry, through
the chair. In terms of groundwater, we have completed work on the quantity aspect for groundwater in the Wakatipu Basin, which is the Aero catchment plan change, and also in the Wanaka Basin. So that would be within the scope. It is around water quality, groundwater quality, that we've got currently a gap, and that would, it's going to be hard to get that within the scope. It would be safe to say at this point it's out. In terms of water quality for surface water, I just want to re-emphasize, we'll try to migrate 6A, acknowledging that we might have to do a few tweaks here and there. Urban water quality as well is still a gap. How far we actually go in addressing water quality at this stage is a little bit hard to predict. We'll probably include it in the consultation and see if we can get fresh water objectives around water quality. But what actually needs to be done in terms of setting limits and setting rules will fall out of those objectives. So we need to go through the fresh water objective setting process first to kind of really determine whether it's fully in or fully out or partially in.
What our priorities are, I suppose, would be the thing. Maybe, yeah, so you would envisage, sorry if I can build on that then, for each FMU, I suppose, you would get the community values, and then you would work through those to set objectives and limits based on priorities that have come out of the value, so then possibly not doing them all at once, you're prioritising until you get to the end and you've covered everything. Yep.
Good. Councillor Lawton and Councillor Bell.
Thank you. It's a big day to get to this point. Well done, everyone. Just in terms of the criteria that's been set for the decision around how we got to the FMUs, good to see the clarity, but then when it gets to actually justification at the FMU level, we don't have that level of detail. So we don't, I think, because it's so important that those FMUs can be examined in terms of why they're there, Yes, if they change through the process, that's fine, but as a starting point, I think we need to be clear against each of those criteria how those FMUs stack up, and if there's a priority for a particular criteria over another, that's fine, and that might change, but we do need to say how and why we got to that. So I'd like to see a summary of that. I'm sure that work's been done, it's just not included, and I think that transparency is really, really important. Because it will be something that we're likely to be challenged on. There's some hotspots, for example, like Lake Hayes, who will say, well, we actually think that we're an alpine lake versus being, you know, put in with a bigger group. And so that was the other point, was, you know, just clear about why we've decided to go with an FOMU for some areas and not break it into more rohi. Because you can obviously have different objectives for particular hotspots within the FMU, so just a justification as to why we did those and according to the criteria. So it's got to be against that criteria. Don't want hearsay. I'm really concerned about the consultation process for these first three catchments rohi. I think in particular our recommendation, step C, suggests that in fact those three, what we've called priority catchments, Tom, those three catchments, it suggests that the engagement processes are the same for the Manahia Kea and then the Arrow and Cadrona when they're not. In fact, we've got two different processes in there. So I think before we put step C to a vote, I think we need to look at that again. Recommendation C. I want to know that we're not going to ask these people to come and put their time and effort in and it be token, and I'm worried about that. One of the challenges that we faced last time was there wasn't enough of the data and information put out to the community initially for them to see the scientific basis for why we're making those decisions. The reference group that we call on in the community are not just there to give us feedback, they are part of our connection back to the community. They will take that information and they will disperse it, because people will ask them, how's the community reference group going? So that the information that councillors and council are making, that are going to be using to make decisions, need to be in that reference group as well, and we need to not try and move it so fast that we miss that step. I think it's really important. My other concern is specifically around the Cadrona. You're right, you know, we're right to say that we've put a lot of time and effort into the Cadrona, but that was a long time ago. Last really, you know, full community consultation was 2013. That community has changed a lot, not so much the water users, but the Cadrona township has grown considerably, and so has Wanaka. And they're very interested in what happens to the Cadrona. We need to be really careful that we're not just ticking off values that we thought were there. They need to, and it needs to be really broad engagement, so, which I think is slightly different to Arrowtown as well, because the engagement was carried out only 2 years ago, and it's so. I think a bit more discussion needs to go into how exactly we capture that information, but also feeding really quite technical information about groundwater, etc., that we know about the Cadrona back into that community as well. So I know the next step is around that baseline and gathering up all that information, and I think our own systems within council, what's our IT going to look like in terms of making sure it's really accessible, because right now it isn't great, so I hope that someone's putting some thought into how we're going to make that information accessible as well. So those were a couple of the points. I'd be really keen to hear your thoughts and ideas how, particularly with those three priority catchments, how we're going to make sure it's not just a token engagement with the community, all of those community groups, apart from the community, one community group member will be paid by the organisation to come along. That one community member, are they going to get paid? Or is it going to be voluntary? Because if we're asking them to voluntarily come along and give a whole lot of their time, 13 meetings, we're really going to make sure it's not. It's got to have to be real and, you know, information that we're going to use and not going to just come back here and make a completely different decision. That's my feeling. And right now I don't feel like there's enough information in there without a terms of reference or something like that to really say, yeah, I agree on this particular way forward.
Yes. With regard to the Arrow and the Cadrona, I recognise that, especially the Cadrona. It's been a couple of years ago. We're kind of in a situation where we have to do a trade-off between the time to get it notified in time and also the degree to which we can do full consultation. How we're trying to tackle it is we actually started internally planning out our next consultation step for the Cadrona, and we're hoping to get onto it as soon as possible. We're thinking May, early May, and by doing that, hopefully, if it turns out that the community wants us to build in an extra step, we can probably build it in as well. So there will be full consultation around the values, and if necessary, we can build in another step to consult or to confirm the values later on again and start talking about freshwater objectives. But yeah, it will depend. We've got a feeling that we've got a good relationship with the Cadrona community. I personally have a feeling as well that there is a catchment group there as well that has dispersed whatever has come out of council, because we've been engaging with them over the last couple of months as well. I think that's our strategy for tackling it, relying on our current relationship with the catchment group and getting on early with the consultation.
Is 300 groups in community in that in the Wanaka
council
community?
Meeting. We've had councillors speak twice already. I don't want that habit to carry on.
Right. Yeah, we're starting to get into some detailed
discussion.
So,
like my answers. I would like my answers addressed, please.
Question.
Yeah.
So
further to the overall engagement process being brought back to this council and how that will be dealt with.
Oh, Mr. Newman.
Yeah. So one thing we're in the middle of a process here, clearly. Sorry, I've used that process word. What we have done internally is had a pretty substantial project meeting for all of those three catchments. And in that project meeting, we've got the bones of what we're calling a project plan for each. And so you're starting to see some of the output emerge from that process. But we'll bring back a consolidated project plan, which shows you all the elements of what's got to be done by when, how the various groups fit into that framework, et cetera, how the advice flows, what information goes to them. So I think that's the time that we should give that particular piece a really robust debate. And so you're getting, so for example, on your agenda today, you've got a bit of a risk assessment. It's a work in progress. I'll be upfront about it. It's not complete to the standard I want it to be yet, but it's good bones. And similarly, I go back to the community dialogue piece, reference groups, consultation, all these sorts of words. Fundamentally, if we do our job correctly, there won't be a gap between the council ultimately and whatever our reference group sort of thinks is ultimately the right solution for example, Manuhirakia. But being realistic about it, there will inevitably be some points of difference from individual participants. That's inevitable. So our job is to narrow the gap. And I'll make, I guess the team and myself will make sure that the information that we're giving to them will be freely available, quite transparent. It's quite an open process. I think that's the key to it. And so therefore, as that develops, you'll get a sense of how it's going as well, right?
So we'll see that detail at a later date, yeah.
Yep.
Councillor Laws, then I'll go to Councillor Bells. Councillor Laws has been waiting.
Thank you. we've come a long way on this from a cold, drafty night in Cromwell about this time last year to get where we have. And I have to be said, a lot of people said it couldn't be done. Well, here it is. This is what it looks like. And it's a lot different beast than what was going to be constructed 12 months ago. So there's been great progress. The devil will be in the detail, but that will be highlighted in the submissions that you receive from the public. So we'll be even better informed after that, and I'm glad that process is occurring. And I'm delighted that also that Minister David Park has confirmed that there won't be a ministerial intervention in this agenda, and that he'll be leaving it to us to do. I think that's a very useful and positive thing. I've also had a look at your appendix. This is really good.
Oh, yeah.
I want to compliment you on that, whoever's done it. We haven't had one of these before. But that's exactly how you do it. And so we can now measure progress against this. And I just want to compliment you on that and say well done. Finally, the definition of community and the reference groups. I just want to highlight a concern or flag something with you, and that is that we've got to be very careful that when we talk about the community, we're not talking about really vested interest groups and that the community does actually exist. Councils have a dreadful problem, including this one, of mistaking the community for interest groups and not having that voice represented. We still don't have a mechanism to allow that voice. For example, if you're going into my neck of the woods, into the Dunstan Roy, how are you going to engage Cromwell, the township, the community, the people? I know you'll get fish and game there, and the Clutha Fisheries Trust, but you won't necessarily get the people of Cromwell involved, and I think we've got to find a way of having that access point into the consultation on this. And finally, on the regional policy statement, on another matter today on the agenda that you'll be aware of, we've struck legal problems. And I'd like to think that all the way along the way, you've got the best legal planning council sitting alongside you, making sure that we don't end up with another Judge Jackson reverse. Because it would be horrible to think that we get to the end of this process and then one of those vested interest parties takes you down in a court. And we have wasted all this time and effort and energy. So on those, particularly those two later points, community and legal counsel, I hope you'll take me on board on that one. Thank you.
Well said.
Councillor Bell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say that I'm pleased to see that this body of work has arrived at the council table. And also feel that the mountain to the sea is fine as an overarching principle for high-level objectives, but I still just, after that two-hour session we had this morning, I've got a better understanding on the Bohays, which is a new word for me, areas, but just got to know how practically that can be managed, and that breaking that down into those units, I guess, and seeing how that's done. I just remember Edward Ellison, when he was sitting over the other side of the table there a couple of weeks ago, saying that he strongly suggested not to rush things, as it's more important to get it right, and I hope that we do those things through this. And also would just like to say I support the two reference groups, but how they are run will be how important they are succeed or success. So that's the key to that.
All right, thank you. Any further discussion? Councillor Hope.
Thank you, Councillor Woody. Just like to say, well done. I am too much clearer from this morning's workshop, and I particularly echo what Councillor Laws said. It's a very good sheet that you put together, and we've all had a really good discussion on it, and I wish you well, and the big part will be how we communicate this. That's the key. Yep. Thank you.
Yes. And there's a real challenge there, actually, ticking this process off. It's just the setting the framework for starting the conversations with the community, essentially. And we are all getting our heads around FMUs and all the other acronyms involved. But we've got quite a challenge to bring the rest of our regional community up to speed with the terms and what this all means, the national policy statement, etc., etc. So, and I see heads nodding. I'm sure staff have been thinking about, as part of the project plan, the communication and the journey we need to take our community on with that. And but that's an exciting opportunity. All right, the recommendations have been moved and seconded. I don't see any other questions, discussion.
I'm terribly sorry, but there is a little matter here that I was just consulting here. And is it, do we mind if
success.
Anyone is about success? Does anyone mind telling us what chess means? C-H-E-S-S.
Oh,
you go, Tom.
Sorry, we have to.
It's basically a model that shows all the inputs into the Manuharakia and the outputs. So what is the water yield of the catchment, what goes into the system, and where and how much is being taken out of the catchment.
It's a hydrological model with water tanks incorporated. I think there is a separate little paper on risk around these catchments. Perhaps I want to come back briefly to that terrible anachronism, CHES, and give you a view on that, right? Because I think that's reasonably fundamental. But that could wait, assuming we're going to deal with that risk issues paper, just as a quick discussion separately. Sarah?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. As I say, the recommendations are there in front of you. They've been moved and seconded. I'll now put them all in favour. Please say aye.
Aye.
Against?
Yeah.
Carried. Thank you, staff. Good discussion. All right. On to item 11.3, an update with respect to delegations. Mrs. Gardner?
Yes, thank you.
Find it on my paper there, Mr. Winder's name on the top of it.
Mr. Winder is not with us this afternoon.
Righto.
So, I can put the paper.
Yes, please.
It's very straightforward. It just reflects the recent realignment that we've had inside of the organisation, and as such we needed to update the position names. The delegations don't change in terms of the level at which delegations are made. So really it's just a mapping exercise. That said, in paragraph 2 there is we're just flagging there that we're undertaking a more extensive delegations review just because it's important to make sure that our staff are as empowered as possible, and there might be some room for movement in terms of delegations that we'd like you to consider in the future. So, but that's not what you've got before you today. Before you, just procedural in terms of mapping to the new positions.
All right. So the recommendations.
So I was just going to move the recommendations.
Thank you, Councillor Robertson. Seconded, Councillor Noon. Discussion, Councillor Laws.
In the delegation, sorry, my apologies. I'm just trying to find it. There was. It's page 29, and it's the last delegations for general delegations. It's got a 1 by it, and that little 1 runs down authorisation to make decisions concerning the conduct and settlement of proceedings in the Environment Court or other jurisdictions.
Yes.
Now, I thought we'd had the discussion around if that there were going to be issues around us making the policy decisions around that, and I wasn't sure that we'd delegated that to anybody other than you, and you've just done it under time pressures and, needless to say, in consultation with the chairman and the deputy chairman. So I'm struggling as to see why lesser individuals are going to end up with what seem quite critical legal decisions to me, or have I got that wrong?
As I understand the way that this works, and the reason why we have this is because the situation you're talking about is the lodging of an appeal. However, these delegations also are about decisions regarding how we manage proceedings in the court, and that also covers court-ordered mediation, for example, on RMA matters. It would be extremely difficult for me if that delegation sat with me alone, because it would mean that I would have to attend all environment court proceedings, etc. Because the expectation when you attend those proceedings is that you have the delegation to sign off on them. So I think it's very important that my general managers also have the ability to attend those types of proceedings and sign off on those sorts of matters.
I'll let Gretchen speak first.
Councillor Roberts.
Yeah, that was the delegations that I understood we currently have, exactly
yes.
The ones that are here, and
yep.
We haven't formally changed those delegations,
right.
But as you've said, we're bringing a review forward in the next committees, is it? Yeah.
Well, can we hold off this one until we do that review?
Yeah, exactly. That might be a place to talk about it. Yeah.
Because I do want to have a chat about that and see what the practical implications are, and that's with Gretchen's approval and yours, Mr. Chairman.
So all we're doing here, though, is approving the equivalence mapping.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. So there's no actual change in delegation.
Yeah.
And the review will come at a later date. I'm not sure whether it's this committee round or some
Look, we're working on it,
right.
But it needs to be relatively detailed, and also timing's quite important in terms of the changes in the positioning we're doing inside of the organisation, because ultimately what we'd like to aim for is staff empowerment, which means potentially there would be delegations at a lower level than perhaps we have had traditionally.
Michael, forgive me. Can I just ask a question then, please? And it is.
How about I move the motion?
All right,
it's been moved and seconded.
Yes. Oh, OK.
Yes.
In that case, Michael shouldn't be allowed to speak, but it's up to you.
No, it's up to you.
No, it's not.
That's why I said, Michael, forgive me.
I know.
Have you got a question?
I have got a question.
Okay.
Please put your question.
Thank you. Well, my question is, can I use the Lindis as an example? And you see, that's where I have this problem with this particular delegation. There, the Otago Regional Council changed its mind during the course of proceedings. Now, it never came back to this group to talk about, it was made. And my understanding was, from the embarrassment of the then chief executive, he didn't make the decision either. Now, you see, I've got a real problem with that kind of scenario playing out again, but it could if we approve this delegation today. And I think that if you're involved in legal proceedings and you're going to settle on something that isn't where you started from, you need to come back with the guys who gave you the writing instructions to start with.
Yeah, so that's a separate discussion.
But that's the question I'm asking.
Yeah.
Did that delegation allow that to occur? Existing delegation.
Yes.
Yes, it did.
Yes, it did allow that to occur, but I think it's fair to say that we have a different executive and we have a different chief executive, and so that may have been around the way things were managed in the past. I would not expect that to happen in this scenario, because if we were going there was a lot of work that was undertaken in terms of getting to the point where that change in position happened for the Lindis, and I would expect that I would have been fully briefed on that, and I have the confidence in my executive that would happen. So I think, from a practicality point of view, like I say, if you chose today to simply give me that delegation and not the general managers as recommended, then I'm going to spend an inordinate amount of time in environment court mediation. And the reality of that for me is that there are people equally, if not more qualified, inside of the organisation who could do that.
Yeah. So I just want to clarify. There's no proposal to change any delegations here.
I accept.
It's moving from an old title to a new title, so there's clarity within the organisation, Mrs. Gardner, right? Yes?
Well, that's right. And so also to ensure that we're as legally compliant
and
as we can.
And we're compliant. The actual review of delegations will come at a later date.
Yes.
And we need to have that conversation
next
then.
Next council.
Yes. I'm sorry, but I guess so. Having had the question answered, Mr. Chairman, then I can't vote for this on the basis that we know there's a problem, and we're going to roll over that particular problem until we do the review. And I would rather, and I don't think, Sarah, that that's necessarily true, that you'd end up having to go to all these mediations. As Chief Executive, you still have the ability to have your staff there, and they have reference back to you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to go to them.
With all due respect, that's not how it works. So
well, I've been to Environment Court.
Yeah, sure. Right, that's
conversation. I was at the RMLA conference with the Chief of Environment Court Justice, Newhook, who said the recent practice note changes to the Environment Court require someone with delegation at all mediations to sign. So it used to be almost voluntary, it's now compulsory. So there has been a significant shift in the expectation for Environment Court mediation.
Righto. So I would expect to see that sort of information as part of the review of the delegation.
That's
so understanding the have the information to understand why and how and all that sort of detail. But again, excuse me, I just want to reiterate, this is about mapping as a result of infrastructure, a structural change and some new titles within the organisation. It's as simple as that at this point. No actual change in delegations. There's clarity between pre-existing job titles and new ones as a result of a restructure. All right. It has been moved and seconded. I'm going to now put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you, Mrs. Gardner. All right. Item 11.4, annual plan. Let me just find this on there. Mr. Donnelly and Mr. Rose Laird, do you want to join us, please? Thank you. Councillor Brown, Chair of Finance and Corp. So this is part of a normal process. We're working through first year of our annual plan after last year's long-term plan. And this report brings us up to date with where we are at and the financial estimates and work programs for year two of the LDP. And it has a recommended community engagement approach, and that reflects Council's intention to maintain the direction that was outlined in the LTP. And there are a series of recommendations there. You can, councillors will have read them, I'm sure. And is somebody, Councillor Brown, are you happy to move those?
I'll move that recommendation. In doing so, I just note that the process this year is a little bit different, that we're not going to have formal consultation. But I think it's probably inherent upon us that we do a good job of consultation, and the plan is outlined there to not only inform people about the annual plan, but raise our profile full stop. So I'm more than happy to move the recommendation.
Thank you. Councillor Noon, are you seconding?
Yes, more than happy to.
Fire recommendations. Good, thank you. Open the paper up for discussion. I'll just ask Mr. Donnelly, do you want to just give us some outline, some key points, please? Or Mr. Roselaar, one of you.
Do you want to outline anything?
I've got an introduction. I take the report as read, and really the key adjustments that we've workshopped through, there should be no surprises there. It's reflecting the directives you gave staff, and they're outlined in Attachment 1. And as you've pointed out, Mr. Chair, there's the proposed engagement approach, which is, again, is outlined in Attachment 2. Again, no surprises.
Thank you. Councillor Lawton.
Thank you. I know that we've workshopped it a lot, but this is a public paper, and a little more information would be good. So can you just summarise, in particular, given the conversation we've just had around the water plan, in the table there, we've got a reduction in spending on water. Is that because we've moved money around, or is that because we're doing less?
Which page are you on, Councillor Lawton?
Page 32 of the agenda.
Page 32. So there is in that. So there's two parts in the water. There is there's the water implementation, which looks like it's gone down. There's also the planning and strategy side. Which sort of looks like it's that's relatively the same. But But one of the reasons why some of the numbers look like they've gone down is because we have reallocated a lot of the engagement time and money into a single pool within the community, the governance area, as opposed to having it spread across all the various projects, because that way it's easier for that group to manage their time in total. So there actually hasn't been a decrease in the overall spend at all. It's just been reallocated across some of the different lines in that instance. In the water space itself, in particular around the planning and strategy area in water, around all the minimum flow setting, there has been an increase, as noted in the paper. That's one of the priority areas, and there has been an increase, a slight increase in the amount of spend that's gone into those areas, and where we could, we've reallocated that out of areas which are not those four areas of priority focus.
Deacon.
Yeah, I think as Councillor Lawton rightly points out, this is certainly a public document, and the numbers that the public will notice are not the ones that have gone down a wee bit, but the ones that look like going up quite a bit. And I think it's worth reminding ourselves of why those numbers, particularly in paragraph 13, look a bit scary. For quite a long time, this council, and we thought it was right at the time, ran a lean operation, focused on a small number of things and did them pretty well. But in the last 2 years in particular, we have listened like never before to what our community across Otago really wants us as a regional council to do. And by and large, the message was there are a lot of things you're not doing or not doing enough of. And those are the messages we took away. And we have, for example, improved our state of environment monitoring. That wasn't cheap. We've done much more freshwater planning. That short certainly isn't cheap. We've gone much more heavily into matters to do with biodiversity, pest management and all the rest. I could go on and on, not to mention wilding pines and so on. We have done a lot of stuff that previously we didn't do much of at all. We've had to employ a significantly greater workforce and their skilled people. They don't come cheap. And at the same time as that, as we were doing more, spending more, and have to continue doing that because we're now on the right track, I have no doubt about that. At the same time as that, we did some pretty serious risk analysis. And we could see that our dependence on revenue from Port Otago Limited was excessive. It was imbalancing the proportion of money that this organisation needs to do all this new stuff from rates, both general and special rating, compared with the amount of money we kept tipping in from Port Otago dividends. And we knew what had happened to Littleton, and we knew that that could easily happen to our big asset out at Port Chalmers. And if that did happen, the effect would be absolutely brutal on every ratepayer in Otago, because such a high proportion of our costs were coming from that single source of revenue and not from rates from the people who occupy our land and region. So we've been correcting that, and I'm very pleased about that, and I continue to support it, even though it causes pain at the pump, as they say. So I just wanted to remind us all that we've got ourselves in this position of rate increases because of those reasons, doing more, employing more, and taking less proportionately in the way of dividends to soften the costs. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the motion.
Good point. Thank you, Councillor Deegan. Councillor Bell.
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to give it a clarification here. In Risk 21 there, it says council engagement for formal hearings isn't going to be used. We know that. What I want to know is how does the general public, through its engagement with its feedback, does it just come to the formal meeting here and we just say, oh, that's great? They just say no or yes or whatever, and do they have any participation? Is really what I want to know, other than just writing on a bit of paper or ticking a box.
Paragraph 18.
Mr. Roselaar, can you remind us all of and explain the engagement process we're going to be working through in coming weeks and through to a report that will come to Council when we work through the final decisions on the annual plan?
Right, so Appendix 2 works through about seven different ways that Council will be encouraging, engaging and connecting with communities. I think specifically, Councillor Bell, there is an opportunity for people to provide specific feedback on the adjustments that we're proposing here, and that's form-based or digital, and that part of it will be reported back to Council before it makes its final decision on the annual plan. So I think that's the key bit that you were referring to.
Yeah, I wanted to know how we take it from there. So it's just really a piece of paper comes back to us.
Right. So just leading into that, there's a brochure that's been prepared that outlines the four priority areas that we've previously discussed, and it touches on some of the key adjustments. And that's that piece, critical piece of information will be advertised through sort of standard media, like all the local rags, for example. And it will educate people as to how they can give feedback on that information, feedback directly to Council. That, as I say, gets reported to you around the end of May. So that's the key to it.
Councillor Noon, then I'll go to Councillor Bell.
Just briefly, with the slightly less formal approach with community engagement, we're working well within the parameters of the Local Government Act. Although it's a little different, it still certainly embraces the concept of having dialogue with the community. And, I look forward to this process being a little bit different, but I'm sure it'll be just as effective.
Councillor Brown.
I just had a question. Is the brochure going to all box holders?
No, it's a digital brochure, but there will be hard copies available in various outlets around the region. So that's where the advertising around, making people aware of this information and what Council is proposing is quite crucial,
yeah.
And that is happening. So just to follow that on, so someone could potentially ring Council and ask for that information. So if you're a person that isn't digital native, you could get that brochure posted to you.
Councillor Robertson.
I just wanted to say that this is a really big opportunity for our council and our communities. Yeah, you could say that we're not doing formal consultation, we're shirking our duties, but actually this is reflecting many years of us doing formal consultation and it not actually meeting the needs of our community. This is giving people a chance to try something different, and our ears have been open to people like to engage in different ways. So this is giving them a number of ways that they can engage through us, write on a form and send it back to us, give us an online response, or come along and just have a chat to us, because we do get a lot of submissions that come along. And through the formal process, it makes it difficult to just have a good conversation. And I think we're going to learn a lot and gain a lot from freeing up the process a bit. And I think most of the submitters will actually appreciate that if we do it really well and we're really genuine. And the feedback that we receive, we're elected members, that's our job, is to synthesise what community tells us, and we enjoy doing that. And it's, I think, probably even more of a genuine approach than making it extremely formal. And especially, the fact that it doesn't trigger, a significant or material difference from what we'd already consulted well with the LTP, this is going to be a good approach. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Neil.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I just want to pick up on some of the comments from Councillor Deacon. And whilst I don't disagree with anything he had to say, I just remind everybody, and myself included, that Port Otago is owned by the council, which in turn means it's owned by the people of Otago. And they are entitled to some benefit from owning such a huge asset. Mm-hmm. And that benefit is returned to them in somewhat a lower rate. And I make no apology for that. Mm-hmm. The balancing has to be that this organisation, to relieve rates, doesn't take so much from its Port Otago that it makes running Port Otago too difficult. So there's the balance. So I make no apology at all. I mean, it's the people's money. If it helps alleviate rates, as long as it's a reasonable return, then that's the way it should be.
Thank you. And I note that the general rate makes up about 16% but over of our expenditure, and the port dividend and our investment income is about 13.5%, so they're not too far apart, so it's a reasonable chunk of our operating costs. And, the other point, just while we're on numbers, public transport is around 30% of our operation. It's a large chunk of capital between the two operations in Queenstown and Dunedin. Councillor Scott.
Yeah, look, just a clarification, really. I mean, from a financial perspective, the key thing from my perspective is that the increase compared to what we believe we were going to be doing for year two of the long-term plan is the $352,000. So we've already consulted on a certain increase, so yes. Let's not relitigate that. But over and above that, we're saying, well, actually, we need to spend $352,000 more than what we've anticipated last year. So to answer the question, the reason why, even though, I mean, for example, we've said there that freshwater plan, water state, biodiversity, elections, harbour management, if we had to articulate the reasons why the $352,000, is there feedback on that particular compared to... Is it in relation to the flood timing? Is it in relation to the... But that's all under grants and so forth, the Wilding Pines.
Yep.
So just to assist that communication, get that clarity, certainly in my head, what's the response to that?
Yeah. $350,000 is the increase, the additional rates that's required from the annual plan compared to what was in year two of the LTP.
Yeah.
So it's relatively small. Those rates increases are in relation to those to three of the four priority areas where we've put a little bit more money in. So that's around the freshwater management, the urban development, and climate change. So they've all gone up slightly. Where possible, we've tried to have some corresponding decreases, but there's still is a net increase. Overall, if you look, the total expenditure has gone up more than that. It's gone up closer to $4 million. But the bulk of that increase is not rate funded. The two big things that are in there are around there's been a redefinition of the management units for Wilding Pines, and that money, that will all be funded via MPI grants. It's just at the time that the LTP was set, those management units hadn't been defined. And then the other, that's about 1.7, 1.8 million, I believe. And the other bulk of that expenditure increase, which again doesn't impact rates, is around timing of some of the flood and drain and flood protection and river management work. One of which is the Kaikōura distilling basin work that was approved just recently, and then there's other timing around some of the capital works which are in the LTP. This is just changing the timing of them. The rates stay the same. They're funded out of the reserves for each of the various schemes. So when you take those two portions out of it, yes, there's only a relatively small change in that in the rates impact, but the actual deliverables are in line with what we'd been saying we were going to be doing in the LTP, just a slight increase in those priority areas.
Okay. And maybe that's one of our key communication pieces. I see in paragraph 9 you say something like that, but that helps crystallise it for me. Anyway, and you've excluded biodiversity from that contribution to the 350.
Yeah, well, the biodiversity one is noted in there that, that while it's a priority area, we haven't at this point got enough clarity to redefine the work program and potentially increase. That work will carry on through next year, and then hopefully we'll have more information to bring back to council if more resourcing and funding's required in that space.
Thank you very much.
All right, no further questions. Thank you. So look, we're really looking forward to engaging with the community around this annual plan. And there is quite, as you can see in the attachment 2 around the community engagement approach, quite a plan there. We will need governance support for that, please. So you'll be getting contacted by staff once we've nailed down the dates and the likes. And looking forward to that process.
So are we doing all of us this time, Mr. Chairman? Not just half the council?
So there are no formal hearings. So there's no hearings panel to be set. There will be council decisions.
The annual plan, though, I'm talking
correct.
About.
Yep.
You're not going to have public submissions on the annual plan.
No.
Yeah, we're seeking community engagement and going out to the community, receiving feedback backwards and forwards. But we're using the part of the annual, the local government act, because we're not actually amending the LTP.
There would be meetings with council as well.
Yep. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
We can all go to all of them.
Mm. Yep. Sorry. And the feedback will be sorted, and it will turn up either probably initially at a finance and court meeting.
Yes, correct.
Yep.
And then
council.
And there's a couple of slots that are booked, and you'll see them on page 126, I think it is, to invite key stakeholders or submitters, if you like, people that are interested in having a say and you want to hear from.
Yes.
So it kind of feels, it's just a little less formal.
That's all.
So let me get this right. We are going to be publishing a draft annual plan for the 2019-2020 year. And we are not going to be inviting public submissions on it. Is that correct?
No.
That's not correct.
That's not correct. But we're not holding formal hearings where you will present your submission. We are engaging with the community through a series of combination of public meetings and community events. And there'll be significant both online and advertising. So as spelt out in one of the attachments here, community engagement plan, and the information, the feedback we receive will be collated and brought to Finance and Corp. At that stage we'll get a chance to discuss, and then it will flow on to a formal council meeting.
So let me get this right again. I won't be getting a summary of the draft annual report in my letterbox, along with everybody else in Otago, and I won't therefore also have the opportunity, having seen that draft annual report, to make a submission to the Otago Regional Council to amend or submit an amendment, either more or less expenditure, to the draft annual plan.
Mr. Donnelly, you can, or Mr. Roseler, which one do you want to?
Well, yes and no. You're not going to. There's not a formal consultation process. The information will be provided and out there. It's not going to go to every letterbox, but people can provide feedback on what the annual plan is. But the key thing is that what we're proposing is not significantly or materially different than what was in the LTP. So fundamentally, the plan has already been consulted on.
No, but sorry, and this is where I 100% disagree with you. I'm sorry, Nick. Many groups, individuals within our community, Mr. Chairman, would want to submit to our annual plan on the basis that it should be amended, that additional spending should be, for example, included in this current financial round.
That's what they can do.
And they can provide that feedback.
Yeah, but they can still provide that. Yes. How are they going to do that if you don't give them a copy of the draft report in their letterbox and the opportunity for every member, every adult living with the Otago Regional Council to submit on it? I'm amazed. You guys just don't understand local democracy.
No, to be fair, Councillor, I think you don't. I think you obviously haven't read the report and you don't understand the legislation. There's no legal requirement to do what you're saying. The information's there. The plan is actually not changing from the LTP. So you're actually instigating a process that's not required under law.
No. You must be the only council in New Zealand who does this. Show me another council.
So let's go back a step. There is a change to the Local Government Act that was made 4 or 5 years ago to allow this process to occur and to simplify the annual plan process where there are not, and the words are here somewhere, significant or material differences in content from the long-term plan. So we're seeking feedback and we want to engage with the community. We've got a communication plan to ensure that happens. But it simplifies the process at the tail end around formal hearings. And we're very keen and we'll be putting significant effort into engaging with the community. And we welcome their feedback either in writing or online, Mr. Roseler.
Or in person.
Yes, correct.
Or in person at various meetings, yeah. Councillor Kempen.
Look, we've been doing a couple of things differently. Even when we've had hearings panels, we've been producing the kind of document which we're talking about producing this year, as well as actually having hearings and the opportunity for people to submit, as I recall. Now, what has happened as a result of having the kind of document that we're going to produce this year has been an enormous rise in the number of submissions and not an enormous rise in the number of people who want to speak to their submissions. So what we're finding is that the communication style of this council, which is now going to be employed exclusively now, this year, has resulted in many more people submitting. I think we were 800 is a number that comes to mind, and they ticked boxes, but they also put underneath that very cogent comment. And so already we've seen a slightly less formal style, yes, resulting in an enormous increase in engagement. I don't know what the problem is.
All right. Councillor Lawton, and then I'll put the motion because it has been moved and seconded with recommendations.
I just wanted to voice that I'm a bit concerned about how much emphasis we do have on being there in person, because it's not particularly well distributed across the region. So we really need to make a good effort on all the other stuff that isn't just the in-person. Can we come up with some creative way of putting people who are really concerned in touch with their maybe a local elected member, so that they can have a conversation if they do contact council, because some people won't directly contact their elected member if they don't make it to a public meeting, for example.
Yep.
I just think there could be some other ways of making sure that they still actually get to talk to a real person as well.
Yes.
That'd be great.
And that often occurs on all range of topics where there's obviously a conversation needs to occur, so to pass on. But Mr. Roselaar's made a note of that. So, yeah.
Well, I just want to say I agree with Councillor Lawton, and that's really where I was coming with my question earlier on, is exactly that. It's just how we get that right through to everybody and how we're going to do it in the hearing aspect. Same thing.
In the what aspect?
Oh, not the hearing, the full council meeting.
Yep. All right, so the recommendations which have been moved and seconded, there's five of them. They're on page 31 of your agendas, I think it is. I won't read them out. You can read them all there. I'll now put, they've been moved and seconded. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Aye. Carried. Thank you. So, as I say, the staff will be seeking your support, councillors, and as we work through the community engagement stage of this process. All right, item 12.1, matters for noting. Thank you, Councillor Neil. So, an update on documents signed and... there is also some certificates. So, yeah, document signed covers it all. And before I forget, Councillor Robertson, you and I got some documents here to sign later. It was moved, Councillor Neil, seconded Councillor Noon. No discussion. Any discussion? Councillor Scott?
Yeah, look, just so I understand what we're approving is on the next page
36, where it says certificate under S41, the RM8 Pioneer. And then Mount Pisa Vineyard Limited. What's that in relation to? What are we signing here?
Gardener, what do those certificates relate to?
They are in relation to, that one in particular, is in relation to a water race licence. So...
it's a new licence.
Usually a renewal.
It'll be a renewal.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
All right, no further discussion, questions? I'll put it all on paper, please say aye.
Aye.
Carried, thank you. Mr. Spector, do we have a cup of tea set for three?
We could finish this.
We could. I'm just asking you a question.
Yes, it is.
Do you want to keep going?
We've actually got a reasonably significant agenda item coming up in committee, so I suggest we have a cup of tea.
Everybody comfortable with that?
Yep.
10 minutes, cup of tea, all right. You stand adjourned, cup of tea. We'll be...